History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that should not go untold. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We really want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, you're going to hear some interesting stories. We might hear from two different people. But ladies first, we're going to start with someone who had a very important role in World War II that you don't hear that much about. Have you ever heard of a Rosie the Riveter? Where you're going to meet one today in Clovis, California. Angie Schiappi is 95 years old, but she tells me she can remember back to when she was 3. So when you were 3, what was going on in your world? Where were you and what was life like?
All right, we lived in Pittsburgh, California, and my mother had, at the time that I was about 3, there was only 5 children. But my grandma lived with us, and my grandpa and my aunt and uncle, because things were very poor then, and, you know, it took a lot of money to feed all those kids and all those people. And my mother was a sick lady. She had epilepsy. Mm. So my grandma took care of all of us. So as we grew up, I got real attached to my grandma. I went everywhere with her, everywhere. My father worked at the steel mill, wasn't making too much money. My mother made good meals, made them last a long time. No leftovers. And we were a happy family. Of course, I didn't know any better, no different, you know.
And your parents had both immigrated from Mexico.
Yes.
So when you talk about your mother's cooking, I've got to hear what was the best, because we live here in the San Joaquin Valley. There's a lot of good Mexican food around here. What did she make?
She used to make homemade tortillas, rice, beans, enchiladas, tamales, you name it, everything. And I could do the same thing.
You still make homemade tortillas?
Yes. I taught Becky, too. Becky makes good food, too.
You do the Christmas tamales also?
Yes. About 100 tamales every Christmas.
Wow.
Yes.
What time should I show up?
About 7 o'clock. We start early in the morning. I make my mole the day before, but it's been a tradition. We make tamales. I follow my mother's tradition. Every year she made them, well, since we were little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you said back when you were 3 years old. I mean, that's in the 1920s.
And yeah.
Those early years for you are the years that America was in the Great Depression.
And very bad.
You were one of 8 siblings.
Yes.
What do you remember about those years, and how did your family get by?
Well, like I say, my mother was ill. And my grandma lived with us, so they pulled their money together and did the cooking together. And we had a old house, big house, and the kids were all piled up, you know, sleeping together, and we were happy. My father worked shift, day shift, night shift, and trying to keep us quiet when Dewey's trying to sleep. So I remember a lot of that. My mother had epilepsy, and I remember when she fell over a couple of times when I was little. Of course, it scared me, but we got used to it. But we were a happy family.
And I always talk to people in your age group, and I'm always fascinated by how different life was back then. But especially for women, for young girls.
Mm-hmm.
The world was a very different place compared to 2020.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember having some ideas of, hey, when I grow up someday, I might do this or that?
Yeah, I wanted to be a nurse. I wanted to be a nurse to take care of sick people because my grandmother was a midwife, and I went everywhere with her. She delivered a lot of kids there, a lot of kids. I didn't know what was going on. I just saw her get some rubber gloves and let's go. And I'd go with her, and I didn't know what she was doing, you know, but she was delivering children. She delivered all of us. And she told me what to do, but I learned a lot from her. I was very attached to her.
And how about your siblings? You got 8 kids in the house, and you said you're all sleeping practically on top
of
each other.
Oh, yeah. Well, my sister, Allison, Connie, and me slept in one bed, and I used to say, don't touch me. Just a double bed with 3 people in it, you know, don't touch me. Of course, I'd start screaming, and I was very thin, very, very sickly, too. I was anemic, had a bleeding nose all the time. I was cross-eyed. I was sickly, and I hated school. I hated school.
Why is
that? I was in the sunshine class because it was a special class for skinny kids. And that was me. I was sickly.
So they called it the sunshine class because you guys needed vitamin D from the sun?
Yes, and cod liver oil every day.
I guess it worked.
I think it worked. It stayed in me because I'm 95.
That's what I'm saying. And everyone can hear how sharp you are and how with it you are. So you hated school.
I hated it. The only thing I liked was the spelling.
Oh, yeah?
I was good at that. I do crossword puzzles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my spelling was, I loved it.
We get into your teenage years. You're going to high school?
Yeah, up to the 11th grade only. I started working in the cannery. Friends of mine started quitting school and working, and they says, we're making 75 cents an hour. So I says, I want to try it. So I did. And my mother got mad because she wanted me to go to school, and the truant officer came looking for me. And I says, no, I'm going to work. So I quit school.
What kind of cannery was that?
Asparagus in Daniel, California. The bus would take us.
There's a day that unfolded in there somewhere. I guess it would have been right before your 17th birthday, a month before, December 7th, 1941. What do you remember about that?
The war?
Yeah, Pearl Harbor.
Roosevelt was president, I know, and my father was very upset. But other than that, I don't remember too much more about that.
You know, I've heard over the years from people who lived in the Bay Area at that time that there were curfews, you had to black out your windows because people thought the Japanese may come there.
Well, the thing is this, on July 17, 1944, my father and mother had come to Fresno to look for a house because we were going to move. And in Port Chicago, about 10 miles from Pittsburgh, there was a big blow up, a big ship blew up.
Yeah.
And we could see it from our yard.
Wow.
The sky all red. And I lived in an Italian neighborhood. And the ladies out there were screaming that the Japanese had bombed us.
Wow.
But it didn't happen. No, it's just something that just happened over there. So I remember that July 17, 1944.
And back before that, with, you know, when Pearl Harbor happened, were your friends talking about this? Do you remember, you know, life changing where you lived at all after that?
Yeah, they started building a Camp Stoneman for soldiers there. It was a depot to go overseas. My father didn't like the idea of us living there with all those soldiers back and forth in the neighborhood. But they put a stop to them coming to the neighborhood. There was a lot of robberies and stuff. So he didn't like staying there. He didn't like living there. He wanted to come to Fresno.
When we talk about World War II, we talk about the soldiers. We talk about the sailors and the Marines and the airmen. But all the things that they were operating, the ships, the planes, the tanks, those really all had to be built. We didn't have those sitting around before the war started. And you and your family were very involved in building ships. Where, how did that start?
My father was working at the steel mill, and he had some friends who told him that they were hiring at the shipyards in Richmond, California, about 35, 40 miles away. And so he went and he got the job, quit the steel mill. And him and my brother went and they started working there. And they told us that we should go and try to get a job there. So my sisters and I went with them and we applied. And they said, yes, they want to be welders. They put us to welding school and I didn't like it because I think it was too heavy. The hood, everything. I says, I don't like this one bit. So he says, okay, you can be a burner. It's easier. So that's how we started. That was in November of 1943. And we worked till July of 1944. All that time, building those ships. Getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, being there by 7, and working till 4 in the afternoon. They had three shifts going. A lot of people. There was hardly any men because they were all drafted. Mm-hmm. A lot of women and old people. Old men and all women, mostly.
Would your whole family work the same shift?
No, we'd all go. My father would drive us. He had a 1939 Mercury. And, you know, gas was rationed then. My father had to get stamps to put gas in the car. because we were working in the shipyards, he got extra stamps.
Mm-hmm.
That was hard. Meat was stamped, too. Yeah, everything was rationed. He had to put the shades down. It was hard, very hard. And he would drive us in the morning. My mother would get up and make lunches for all of us. Or sometimes we'd buy the hot lunch there, half asleep, you know. And we didn't wear no clothes. Levi's and sweatshirts and flannel shirts and boots. That was my wardrobe all the time.
Were you ever concerned that you couldn't do that job?
No. I liked being around people. I'd like to be out in the with everybody, you know, learning. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't hard work at all. Just carry the settling with you and you hook it up and, you know, do what you have to do.
Well, yeah, and I want to understand this process. But first of all, what kind of ships were you guys building?
Liberty ships. You're working three shifts very fast. Before you know it, was up. My father and brother were riggers. They would just tell the crane guy over here, you know, they wore helmets. So, yeah, my sisters were welders. They were spotters. They would put the seam together and the horseshoe like this and weld it. And then I would come and burn it out. That was my job. But it was fun. It was fun. We were making a lot of money.
Was that the Kaiser shipyards?
Kaiser, Richmond, Kaiser. There was three shipyards, two, and three. We worked at number two.
Five of you were going every day.
Every day.
You think there was any family that had more?
Oh, yeah. A lot of our friends were going. Their families were all going. Same setup. They work in a different yard, but everybody was trying to make a buck.
Did you understand the significance of what you guys were doing?
Yes, I did. Yeah, we were doing something good, and we were making money.
And help me understand exactly what you did. You said you were carrying an acetylene torch around?
Yeah, carry it to the thing and then hook it up. And then when they needed any burning, I would take it over there and light it and do what I did. They called them horseshoes. And this was welding, and this was welding, holding this together. And I would have to take it out after the girls welded this.
All right.
So, yeah, and then I just toss it. They had a big bucket you toss it in. I had a boss that followed me around, helped me sometimes with the line, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
What did you enjoy the most about your time as a Rosie?
Just being with the other women. I all had stories. My husband's overseas. My father's overseas, you know. Some were just alone because their husbands were gone. They thought they were doing their bit, too. But, you know, every time they launched a ship, it was a lot of fun.
What would they do?
Oh, a lot of dignitaries came. They get the champagne bottle, whatever they do. And that was a lot of fun to watch. And then they had the shows, the USO shows.
Yeah.
The Andrews sisters came. Bing Crosby came, you know, at our lunchtime. They had a little stage. We'd sit on the ground and they perform. And that was a lot of fun for an hour.
Well, I guess that right there shows you the importance of what you were doing. Because that's the same treatment they gave the troops overseas, bringing Bing Crosby or Bob Hope.
When the Andrews sisters came, my father loved it. He loved it. But then we saw Bing Crosby and Bob Hope came too. But I didn't care for him, you know. His jokes didn't do anything for me. We knew the war was going on, and we had to keep the shades down and, you know, do what they told us to do. You were living in the dark, really. He was tired of it. He didn't want to stay there no more.
You might have kept working at the shipyards if he didn't move you there?
We could have kept working, because all my friends were still working. Girlfriends that we had, you know, they were still working. And then we moved here and I lost contact, you know.
So you would have been here when VE Day and VJ Day came around?
Oh, yeah. I was working at the Al drugstore for less money.
Can you help us understand how big a deal that was when that war that had been going on for so long was finally over?
Oh, everybody was cheering. Everybody was so happy. We had a lot of soldiers here and there. There was a couple of camps here, and they used to come in the Al drugstore. I used to work at the fountain. They came in with the uniforms, and everybody was hugging them. We were all happy. It was over with.
And none of your brothers ever got drafted or anything?
Oh, yeah. My three brothers all went. My brother Ernie got drafted first, and my brother Junior went in the Navy, and my brother Jerry got drafted in the Army. My sister Alice, her boyfriend, he was in Italy, and my sister Connie's boyfriend was in Germany. And I had friends in Pittsburgh, a lot of friends that had gone in the service. And a lot of them had passed away.
That was the reality during World War II when more than 406,000 Americans made that ultimate sacrifice. More than 16 million Americans served in uniform, and millions more were doing their part on the home front, just like Angie and her family were. It's time for our first break, but when we come back, what was it like for Angie to be honored at the Rosie the Riveter World War II Home Front National Historic Park? We're also going to hear from her daughter and her husband of 70 years, who has quite a story of his own to share. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. When life throws you curveballs, you have to be adaptable, or at least have a good pinch hitter on the bench who knows how to handle a curve. When it comes to your business, Provident Payments is the best teammate you could ever have. Perhaps it helps that many of the leaders for one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America are former ballplayers. Contactless payments, online ordering, point of sale, you name it, Provident Payments knows it. Now, you could get some of these services from one of the big banking companies, but you're never going to get the kind of personalized service that Provident Payments delivers every day. 24/7 solution-based tech support. When your ability to process payments goes haywire in any way, time is money. So would you rather wait on hold for who knows how long, or would you like to have a direct line you can call for immediate help? That's where a good teammate comes in. Learn more about bringing Provident Payments onto your team at providentpayments.com. They really are one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. That website again, providentpayments.com.